Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
You're about to listen to a new episode of the Redefining Cybersecurity Podcast with Sean Martin. Have you ever thought we're selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Well, perhaps we are. Let's look at how we can organize a successful information security program that integrates business culture with people, process, and technology to drive growth and protect business value.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
Hola, Marco.
Hola. ¿Qué pasa?
I don't know how to say it in Spanish. That was a quick return to English, wasn't it?
I lost
it?
You there already.
Jeez Louise. Casa. If you asked me how I was, I could have said something.
No.
I don't know. Anyway.
That's too easy.
That's too easy.
So, I have a question.
This is a bad start for a conversation.
No. It's good because I have a question for you. Why am I here?
I have no idea.
You invited me like 5 minutes ago. He said, you have a podcast. I said, No, I don't. It's like, you're coming.
Thanks to technology, and maybe we can blame technology. This has been a fun time getting scheduled, and you've been added, but somehow it didn't end up on your calendar. So you've been invited. You just didn't know for some reason, but I really want you here because I'm thrilled to have Kate Esprit on again. Of course, Kate's been on with us before. Kate, thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Marco. Thank you so much for having me. It's a true pleasure to be back. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Super fun. And this is a topic. And as you pointed out, Kate, it's something we've not discussed nor addressed in quite a while, at least a year. I know we looked at some of this stuff maybe a couple of years back, but the state of cybersecurity in Latin America, right? Do they get enough attention or not? Are they targets or not? We're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. What's the culture like, government, business, society, and how does that culture impact their ability to stay safe as citizens and companies, right? So we're gonna get into all that fun stuff. And Marco, that's why you're on, because you have political science and philosophy, and I'll probably take it more into the technical threat actor stuff. And Kate sits in the middle covering both, which is amazing. That's incredible. So a little bit more about you, Kate. I know folks who hopefully have seen the episodes you've been on, they know a little bit, but what have you been up to lately?
Well, thank you again for having me and allowing me to come on and discuss with you both this topic. I'm really, really passionate about bringing more awareness to the not only the threat landscape in Latin America, but garnering conversation around what we would call under-monitored or under-reported regions. So that includes Africa, parts of Asia, and it's just an exciting opportunity for me. So thank you. My background, my career kind of started, I lived in Argentina and decided, okay, I want a job where I can speak Spanish. That was like my sole criteria. And so I kind of started to work in Latin American political and like geopolitical affairs. Did some kind of like private sector intelligence work. I at one point was working at a law firm, working with kind of immigrants from Central America who had been victims of violence. So I kind of had the opportunity to really study and get to know the region, and kind of just the layers that go along with understanding Latin America as a culture, as a history, as a people. And it's my passion. And I think transitioning into the cyber work, you know, I assumed that I would have to kind of leave my work in Latin America behind. I think you just pull up any threat report, it's usually talking about Russia, China, Iran, DPRK. Although that is changing a little bit now, I think. But I actually found people were really interested in cyber criminals in Latin America. So I found that it was a great way to kind of merge both of my interests. So that's a little bit about me.
Well, that's really cool. You didn't tell me before about Argentina. I've been in Paraguay a few times, so close by, but I never made it to Buenos Aires, which is always a place that I wanted to visit.
Oh, please.
That's a conversation for another podcast, maybe. I'll have you on another one.
Please, yeah.
You know, I'm going to get going with this, with the first question that probably people listening right now will wonder, which is, why? I mean, don't we already assume that cybersecurity, technology, everybody's connected? Sure, few countries less than others. It's not like the same everywhere. But why we don't talk about that?
Oh, Marco, I love that question. I think it's so, I think not a lot of people are asking that question. The way that I think about it is from two different perspectives, right? There's the security researcher perspective, which is like the threat intel analyst. You know, when it comes to Latin America, many adversaries are truly cyber criminal in nature. They're financially motivated, they're opportunistic, so they're not really aligned with state or government objectives. And because of that, they have less, comparatively less resourced, right? So they operate on a smaller scale. They're very specific in their targeting. They tend to only focus on victims in the region, not really outside of LATAM, although I do think that's changing and there's been some interesting examples. Attribution is really tricky as well when it comes to adversaries from the region, given the common, given the common language of Spanish, given the fact that they utilize open source malware, what's available in open source rather than something that's custom. So I think those three things kind of lead security researchers to prioritize other adversaries that are doing more new and novel and sophisticated techniques. That's the first perspective. From the second perspective is the perspective of the industry, right? And when I say industry, I'm talking mainly kind of commercial threat reporting, right? Like who is writing the reports and the intelligence that people are consuming about the threat landscape all over the world. And I think the industry right now tends to focus on either campaigns orchestrated by large nation state sponsored groups, or groups that are doing very novel, very stealthy techniques and are touching across the globe in terms of their targeting. So I think there's little market incentive for these commercial vendors to report on what's happening in Latin America or other underreported regions, like what's happening in Africa, because they're less high visibility, if that makes sense. So that's kind of my, again, this is Kate's opinion, but that's the way that I see it right now.
So let me ask this. I mean, I embarrassed the heck out of myself at the very beginning, because I wasn't able to carry on a conversation beyond
your Ola was very convincing.
beyond one word. So I'm gonna latch onto that, because how important is the language? Because you talk about some of the other countries. Clearly, there's no, for most of the criminals that are succeeding, there's no barrier for them to break out of their native language and into English. But kind of the reverse, breaking out of English or one of the other languages into Portuguese or Spanish or something else, that shouldn't be difficult, regardless if I can't do it. It should be difficult for most people. Does that, is that a hindrance? Or does that, what about the language makes or changes the landscape? Because you mentioned them only really focusing on Latin American countries mm-hmm. in terms of targets, and reporting kind of stays, I presume, language-based as well. And then they kind of get left out because it's rooted in the language. I don't know. How important is the language as part of what you're looking at?
That's a really interesting question. I think, like I said before, when it comes to attribution, you know, attributing specific activities to a specific group, I think the fact that most of these groups speak Portuguese or Spanish makes it difficult, right? Of course, there's dialect differences between countries. Argentine Spanish has a different sound, different words than Colombian Spanish, for instance. But it is still the same language. So I think if I'm a security researcher hunting through artifacts after a campaign and I'm seeing just, you know, artifacts in the Spanish language, I just see that it's Spanish. I don't necessarily have enough to base my decision on, oh, okay, it's probably this threat actor. So I think from an attribution standpoint, that would be my assessment. From the perspective of the threat actors themselves, I think it's more of a stick to what you know rather than, we might not speak other languages, so we don't want to go and target other, you know, victims located elsewhere. I think it's more about, you know, we have incredible access to the region. You know, some of the countries in Latin America are major, major economies with major access to financial resources. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't I just target?
There's plenty of opportunity already.
Yeah, it's like you almost have to think about it through the lens of like, I'm going after the money. I want to get in there and get out. And, you know, very little else is going on with my operations. Now, I do want to point out something interesting that's happening that we're starting to see happen is we're starting to see some of these groups that have historically targeted other victims in Latin America starting to expand their operations overseas. We've seen this with Brazilian developers of malware. They're starting to sell their tools to overseas operators in Europe. We have local criminal groups in Latin America selling initial access to ransomware operators overseas. We even have foreign adversaries starting to, you know, who haven't really targeted the region ever before, are starting to, you know, launch espionage campaigns in Latin America. So I do think the landscape is shifting a bit in that sense.
Interesting.
So many questions.
Yeah, I know. So I'll ask you two. Well, no, I'm not going to ask you two questions. I'm gonna ask you one question. So Latin America is pretty big, right? So there may be a lot of resources there already, but let's touch on: are there certain countries in South and Latin America that are more or less active, and how do they differentiate one from another? You mentioned Brazil, Colombia, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina. Any more active, less active, or that you can easily say, yep, that's coming from that place?
That's a great question too. Man, you guys are asking amazing questions. It is important to keep in mind the distinctions between different countries, right? Because I think that's one of the reasons that Latin America is so unique as a threat landscape is because what's happening in Mexico does not necessarily reflect what's happening in El Salvador from a cybersecurity perspective, from an economic perspective, from a political perspective. Major countries that I tend to focus on, so I'll put my, you know, just keep in mind that sometimes I focus on certain countries more than others. Mexico for sure. Mexico is a major economy and has a huge financial sector. And because of that, they're hugely targeted for ransomware. There are threat actors that only target Mexico. Argentina is another one. Argentina has a very interesting country in the way that it's become a almost hotbed for zero day developers and hackers. Argentina has a very, very, very vast underground hacking community. And part of that is because of political and economic reasons, which that's might be a conversation for another podcast. Brazil, as you mentioned, yes, Brazil is the number one. I think it has the most number of detections for banking Trojan malware in the world. 8 out of 13 banking Trojan families that are active today come from Brazil. So it's very unique in that sense. So you're absolutely right. Every single country has a little bit of a different threat environment. That being said, I still think that there are issues that unify the countries together, and that, you know, certain threats like ransomware are kind of faced by them all.
And sorry, Sean, one quick follow-up. Is that connected to the technological development of the country itself? Like more modern economy versus little more agricultural or...
Yes, I would say for sure. It's tied to, I would say, the size of the economy, of the national economy, aka does the country have those crown jewels that adversaries go after? I think the other interesting lens that I don't think is necessarily discussed from the perspective of an adversary is the government of the nation. Right? Like Venezuela is the number one purchaser of Chinese military hardware in the region. And I think that's like an interesting fact because there's been more Chinese investment in infrastructure in the country. And so, you know, one has to wonder, given the foreign influence, are they, you know, Venezuela has their own like kind of domestic adversary cyber capabilities as well that they're launching offensively. How does foreign influence and kind of the position of national governments influence the cyber capabilities and the defense capabilities of each country?
So my natural inclination is go down to the technology. I thought that's where Marco was going to go when he talked about technological advancement. I was like, you stole my question, but I'm going to go kind of back to the government end here. Because if we look at the United States, the government may not be functioning, but the goal is to across the states, we have some guidance at a federal level, some frameworks and rules and laws and regulations to help steer us in the right direction. Maybe not as fast as many would like, or maybe too aggressive in some areas. We can look at Europe, the European Union. They all have a similar thing where there's an entity guiding multiple states through some of these things. Is there an equivalent in Latin America, South America? Or is there each country kind of left to their own devices, deal with it on your own? and is that a bad thing? I don't know.
Right. So Organization of the American States, OAS, is a multilateral organization that part of their reason, you know, part of their reason for their work in Latin America is ensuring that each country develops and implements a national cybersecurity strategy. Not every country in the region has done that yet, but that is the effort of a organization like OAS to help countries at least develop that kind of baseline level of cyber governance. So just wanted to acknowledge that because they're a fantastic organization. This is not sponsored, but there are some very interesting multilateral efforts to kind of bolster cyber defense in the region as a whole. We've seen other examples like the Counter Ransomware Initiative, which was, I believe, it's the International Counter Ransomware Initiative, but the White House put out a press briefing last year with 50 member countries five of those countries are based in LATAM. So I think there is growing enthusiasm on the part of Latin American countries for multilateral efforts like that. However, the individual kind of national governance abilities does hinge on the individual country and their governments, and the amount of resources that they have, to be quite honest with you. Costa Rica is an interesting example because, you know, they got hit with that Conti ransomware attack at the end of 2022. It was huge. It was big enough that it made international headlines. And that jumpstart, I think it was like a week after Santos took office. But that kind of jumpstarted the whole country's focus on cyber defense and cyber capabilities. So now the government is investing heavily in, again, strengthening their cybersecurity framework, implementing the laws that they need to implement, thinking about workforce development, right? Like, how do we build up our pool of cyber talent and get them to, you know, kind of work for both private and public sector? So that was
and not the
longer
other,
answer not, to not, your question.
Not the other sector.
Not the other sector.
The third sector in this equation. Well, I guess the consumer is the fourth sector. But anyway, Marco, well, you?
Yeah,
I mean, keep going. But.
No, I have a parallel that I'm curious about, which is the organized crime, right? And how it's hard to believe that they don't see an opportunity here, of course. And as they organize crime, there is a lot of money to be made by using cybercrime. Is that a connection with that? Like, I'm thinking drug cartel, I'm thinking a lot of other reality out there. So are there groups that can be associated with existing cybercrime? I mean, existing crime cartel over there anywhere? Mm.
So we have seen some examples of kind of traditionally criminal groups, traditional in the sense of non-cyber, like non-digital, kind of starting to veer into the realm of cybercrime. The Sinaloa cartel is an example. They operate out of Mexico. They're one of the biggest drug cartels in the region, let alone Mexico. And they have started to do some interesting things on the dark web, such as selling data. They're starting to they're starting to sell different things on the dark web. Their OPSEC has improved remarkably. So I think there's kind of examples like that. There is still a very clear distinction as it stands right now between those traditional criminal groups and the cyber adversaries. It is possible sometimes they work in tandem, but it still seems like people are staying in their lane because what they do works, right? The Sinaloa cartel they're not necessarily in need of funding because they are still trafficking drugs. They are still kidnapping victims for ransom. You know, they are still very connected to local officials. So I think their streams of revenue, it always comes back to the money, at least in Latin America, when we talk about the crime landscape in general. I think what the Sinaloa cartel is doing right now is working. So they're not necessarily incentivized to build out resources elsewhere, if that makes sense.
This may seem like an odd question, but I'm going to put it out there anyway. Because they make so much money, are they also a target? And do you have any insight into how they might leverage commercial products and tools and whatnot to protect themselves from cyber criminals? I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
That's an interesting question that I'm not sure a lot of people are looking into. I actually don't have an answer for you. I don't know. It could be happening. That would be brilliant, but very risky as well, right? If you get caught extorting or robbing or hacking, some of these very big high profile groups, you kind of have a target on your back now. So that's interesting. I think what is more likely to happen is eventually the groups start working in tandem. We see that a lot with Latin American adversaries. We see that with kind of cyber gangs operating in Brazil. It's like, okay, well, we might as well work together because we have the same objective. So why don't we just pool our resources together and our capabilities together and have a bigger impact? That would be my assessment.
Because I was envisioning the other where they're competing. So if I can delay deliveries using technology, or if I can disrupt, right, or use misinformation to take the competitor out of the game.
Well, I will say recently there's been a string of kind of mass arrests in Brazil. They're trying to really crack down on the cyber criminal gangs that are operating Brazilian malware, like banking Trojans. And so I wonder if, you know, are there other groups out there that are feeding the authorities information in order to, you know, lead to the warrants and the arrests, kind of eliminate the competition. But I don't know. I can't prove that.
It's interesting. And I, apart from the good idea for a movie that Sean just gave us,
ChatGPT is writing the script for me.
Patent it. It's already, no one can steal it.
It's already going, I think. Is it thinking right now? Well, you said at the beginning that there is really no interest for other country to get into what's going on there because, you know, if it's not affecting us, why would I care? But while that may work for certain kind of local criminal practices. You also said that the Brazilian banking Trojan are sold all over the world. So I think that should spark the interest of the international community to go ahead and do something about that. As we know, there is no boundaries in on the internet. So
totally.
What's going on what do you think it will going on happening in either, you know, this year and the next year coming up as they expand, would they call the attention of the international community?
Yeah, I think short answer, yes, I do. Again, I spoke about at the beginning about why the region is underreported, but I do want to focus on, I do think that's starting to change. I think we're in a position right now in the interconnectivity of our world where we cannot simply focus on one territory versus another because the nature of our networks do not know those boundaries, right? And I think you mentioned kind of Brazilian malware starting to spread overseas. I think that also goes with other adversaries in the region, for instance, Blind Eagle. They just hit North America for the first documented time ever. I think it was last month or this month. And that's really significant, right? So I do think that these adversaries are starting to grow and become more bold. In terms of what's to come in the threat landscape, I would be very curious if, I think a couple of things. I think I would be very curious to see if the rate of cryptocurrency attacks rises in the region. Central America and the Caribbean are one of the biggest adopters of cryptocurrency. And I think, you know, that I think it was El Salvador that just declared it a national currency, Bitcoin, a national currency. So I wonder if that just, that increase in attack surfaces would kind of lead to more crypto-based attacks in the region. I think that there is we'll start to see continued increasing in targeting by foreign adversaries against the region. Again, foreign influence in the region is really growing. There's been very interesting kind of technology and defense and economic trade agreements between countries like Russia and Iran with countries in Latin America. Adversaries from the region are, again, starting to kind of expand, but they're also transitioning from this more general, oh, let's see who we hit, to more kind of a more narrowed focus, right? They're starting to focus more on specific high-profile victims, such as governments and corporations. If you're hitting a corporation, like, chances are you can hit a bunch of different countries outside of the region as well. So
I now want to dig into kind of the technology bit, because I don't want to sound naive, but organizations in Latin America, how advanced are they in terms of adopting new technologies, or you find that they either are limited because of the way they operate or because of trade regulations, that they're, that the subset of technologies is smaller than perhaps organizations in the US or Europe. So I don't know, this might be a naive question, but because I'm thinking about there's the target, the organization, but then there's the target, the system.
Mm-hmm.
And if the system is consistent, more so than in other regions, you have a broader, or sorry, more focused view on what's possible, where the weaknesses are. You don't have to hunt all over the place. So from an adversary perspective, the footprint is more focused, and you can target the things that you know will work, and not have to hunt around and do a lot of recon to find those things. So right. I don't know. Any thoughts on that in terms of the exposure an organization has based on the technologies they have available to them, better or worse than other regions?
Ooh, I think it's similar, to be honest. I think, again, it's so country by country focused. You have countries like El Salvador, Brazil, Argentina that are drastically kind of implementing 5G infrastructure in a really real way. And so I think in that sense, these are examples of countries that are technologically maturing. And then you have other countries that are still running legacy Windows OS systems within their government agencies, right? And I think it's about access to resources and the economic status of the country, but I also think it's about still needing to almost reframe mentalities in terms of what is the most important thing for a nation's defense. And the problem with cyber and boosting cyber capabilities and getting access to better technology, one, it costs money, but two, I think it's such a domino effect, right? It's like, okay, well, we're still running Windows 7. Okay, we need a update. That would involve getting Windows 10 or 11 machines, right? Let's say we do that. Okay, now we need to implement firewalls. We need to implement things like IDS, IPS. We need to implement things to protect those systems. And so it becomes not just a matter of resources and hardware, but it becomes a matter of who do we have that knows how to implement this? There is a huge, huge educational gap, I think, in terms of level of expertise. And I think that's what makes the problems of Latin America very similar to the rest of the world, right? We have that in the US. We have the talent gap that everyone loves to talk about. How do we educate our younger generations and get them, you know, in a place where they can help support this, because this issue is not going away and we're behind and et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of my assessment. It's a difficult one.
Okay, let's talk about the talent gap. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to talk about that.
You already exposed my gap of talent.
Now, what I want to talk about is this. So we've talked about technology, cyber attack, defense, maybe data breach, the underground market and many other things, but we haven't touched on the manipulation of information and also interference in in election, which we know may get a little complicated in many countries down in South America and Latin America in general. And people may not have the latest computer, desktop, with the latest operating system, but almost everybody, I think, they have a mobile phone, a smartphone. And so maybe they don't run many things there from a business perspective, but they do run their life. They're on Facebook, they're on TikTok, they're on Instagram. And so do you know anything about the other threat for cyber, which is interference in election, politics, manipulation of fake news, and all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine we would see election-related influence operations this year, because there's a number of really big elections in the region. Mexico is about to undergo their largest election in a long time, because they have national elections, but then they have municipal and kind of local level as well going on at the same time. Panama's has elections, Uruguay as well, Brazil, Chile. So yes, I think we've seen that in the past. We will continue to see it. One thing I want to bring up is the use of spyware in the nation against journalists and human rights defenders. Mm. That's a really big issue for a couple of countries whose governments are utilizing spyware to kind of target journalists and maybe other people that are outspoken against said government. You know, we've seen the use of Pegasus spyware and Predator. In Venezuela, Maduro's government used, I think they collaborated with mobile service providers to monitor 1.5 million people's phones. So just citizens, not even necessarily journalists or high profile human rights defenders. So that's another really big issue. And I know that that's not unique to Latin America. That's going on in other areas of the world too. But I do think that's a consideration for sure. So.
And are they, I mean, our government, apart the one that actually used this spyware, are the one that don't want it to use implementing any form of campaign, educational campaign, and anything like that to make the citizen aware of that possibility?
Yeah, there are a number of civil society organizations that are dedicated to that, especially in countries where it's happening, right? Because there's a need to educate citizens and of what's going on. There's even, I think, been some high-profile lawsuits. So it'll be interesting to see what has come of those lawsuits, or if anything, you know, will change in that regard. My guess would be, at least in certain countries, the use of spyware is still happening. We just don't know about it. So, but anyways, going back to your original question in terms of kind of other types of cyber attacks, yes, I do believe that that is going on, and we'll continue to see that. Especially Latin America has a very high mobile user rate. It has a huge rate of social media. We saw that in the 2016 elections in Brazil, as well as the 2020. Tons of fake news spam campaigns happening via WhatsApp, and were disseminated via WhatsApp. It led to a huge lawsuit against Meta and WhatsApp, the companies in Brazil, to try to kind of counteract it. So yeah, but we see that in the US too, I think, right? It's kind of a problem everywhere, unfortunately.
So as we're talking about this, I'm thinking, so clearly from a political societal perspective, some of the stuff will have an impact broad stroke across the citizen base, right? As we move back, so that's kind of citizen government. As we move back into the business world, though, I mean, it costs money to protect. It costs money when we can't protect enough, and it costs money to respond to successful attacks, right? We either lose something or we have to pay extra, or we have lawsuits, whatever. All that cost trickles down somewhere. Either the company can't afford the cost and they go out of business, or the company transfers the cost to their customers, be it other companies or the consumers. So do you have a sense of the impact? So beyond just they use it to conduct ransomware campaigns, do you see the, I don't have any data on the costs of the impact and how that might affect the economy and the citizens in different countries in the region?
Oh man. Yeah. There's been a number of reports from a couple of well-known vendors like Kaspersky and ESET Security who have reported on this. They did some reporting last year regarding specifically the impact of ransomware on businesses. It's astronomical. I can't give you a number, but it is, it's a major consideration, right? And I think what we're starting to see that's very interesting in terms of ransomware is victims in the region, as well as other parts of the world, are not paying the ransom anymore. They're just taking the loss. And I think there are relatively cost-effective ways to protect your data. And I think when you get hit with a ransomware attack and you don't have data stored in backups, that is a good lesson. The next time this happens, you have a backup copy of your data. Because if you do, and you're hit by another ransomware attack, which happens, right? In Mexico last year, we saw government agencies were hit twice by ransomware groups 48 hours to 6 months later. So they got hit by one ransomware strain, and then 48 hours to 6 months later, they got hit by another, which is so unfair. But when that happens, you have to ask yourself, how do I not, like, the only reason I'm paying them is because I don't have the data that they stole. So that's something that I would point out. Does that answer your question?
It does. I think, yeah, that's one example of ransomware. I think there's probably a lot there, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot either, but I do want to shift to, is critical infrastructure. I think everywhere is weak in this regard. There's no one country immune from attack and immune from weakness there. So what's the state of critical infrastructure cybersecurity, and is that government, commercial, private sector? Where's the responsibility sit in the region? Does it mix between countries? Any thoughts on that big picture, which is a whole mess, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is definitely country dependent. If a country has a national CSIRT, they're already one step ahead of everybody else, in my opinion. If you have a dedicated CSIRT team that is monitoring threats coming in and threatening critical infrastructure and your government agencies, that is already an amazing kind of first line of defense, right? I think of Chile as an example. Chile has a very mature CSIRT. They are also, I would consider them to be a regional leader in cybersecurity, maybe along with Brazil. Just because of not only their national cyber capabilities, but kind of the maturity of their reporting and governance as well. CSIRT Chile, just the Chilean president actually just signed into effect their updated cybersecurity policy, which actually defines the critical infrastructure sectors, right? Like, what do we consider critical infrastructure? And I think that's a huge step in the right direction. There are other considerations, though, that I think aren't being asked when it comes to critical infrastructure in Latin America. And I'll go back to my example of 5G, right? Which nations have access to this infrastructure? Who built it? The answer to both of those questions happens to be China. So I think there's But it's also a difficult conversation, right? When you consider Latin America, you have to do it not through a US lens. You have to do it through the lens of that country, because they do not necessarily have the same diplomatic or political history that the US does with some of these countries. So, you know, from their perspective, 5G could bring connectivity to really, really remote regions of the country that really need that internet connectivity, that could really bolster, you know, the quality of so many lives. So it almost becomes a philosophical debate, Marco, hope you're listening. when it comes to kind of considerations of critical infrastructure in that sense.
Well, I've been told to wrap, and now we went there, and it's very hard.
you go there.
I suggest another conversation, actually, right? Because it makes me think about the history of Latin America and South America, and again, the situation where, like, if you look at Africa or other places in Asia, and you see an opportunity to create an influence, and technology now, it's that. It's the infrastructure, the 5G, and I agree with you. It's a sociological question of very high importance, because the conundrum of, do we stick with nothing or with not being over and advancing our technology and all that it brings to our population versus, you know, risk to have.
Who knew that a selection of a certain technology would put you in one position or another on the political global stage?
Right.
Where are we? Let me think. I don't know if you were with me in the conversation. I think I was with Theresa Payton the other day when we were talking about TikTok. And I haven't published this yet, but stay tuned. Advertisement. We went back to talk about the telephone company, Huawei, the Chinese company. And it's like, you know, one is hardware, one is social media, but they're both affecting other country. And I mean, cultural influences have been going on for many, many years. So again, a big can of conversation that we're opening again.
Can of something.
Yeah, but yeah, we should have it. We should have it, even on a panel. That would be very,
yeah,
very
that'd be really
cool.
Fun.
So with that said, Kate, I hope you had fun. I hope we didn't put
so
you
fun.
On
I did.
The spot with some weird questions. And we
handled it with complete grace. I'm impressed with the amount of knowledge you have for the region, for sure.
Yeah, and any one of our question, I think, was really driven by curiosity, because we don't know enough about it, and that's not something that should happen. We should always know more about the other country and what they go through, especially because we're all connected. So I don't know, Sean, this is Redefining Cybersecurity, is Redefining Society, and it's going to go probably on both of our channel as well as
our
ITSP channel.
Yep.
And Kate, thank you so much again for being so
tremendous
kind.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Likewise. I definitely believe in the work that you guys do with this show, and I just want to thank you. It's a huge honor. And I definitely want to underscore that I'm just one of a multitude of researchers out there that is kind of focusing on the region. So special shout out to those people too, because they're really helpful.
Absolutely. Well, the work you do, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because the work you do is tremendously important, critical, in fact, to the safety of Marco and I. That's what we care about, right? We care about ourselves, Marco. And we care about
responsibility.
And we care about that.
I care about South America and Latin America. So yeah,
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly. No, on a serious note, it's important to keep awareness, right? If you don't know, you can't find the issues that need to be addressed. So
yeah,
totally.
As a matter of fact, you know, I would love to have this conversation. If you know somebody that is doing the job that you're doing, but is focusing more on other region of the world that are not as talked about, like somewhere in Africa, in Asia, or any other part of the world, I mean, I'd be happy to have this conversation. So hopefully this is the
Absolutely.
First of many that will come here on ITSP Magazine. Until then, everybody should stay tuned. There'll be links to connect with Kate on the notes of this podcast and share it. If you're watching the video, hit the like and subscribe. And if you're listening to us, do the same thing. We are on.
Leave a comment. Yeah, I'd love to get some comments on the show as well.
Say something about Sean T-shirt.
Oh, talk about how great
is that?
Talk about how great Kate is. That's what I want to hear.
That too.
What we want to hear.
I'd like to hear that too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
there you go.
Everybody.
It's a unanimous decision.
Nice comment about.
We all want positive feedback on the information that Kate shared.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Pentera, the leader in automation security validation, allows organizations to continuously test the integrity of all cybersecurity layers by emulating real-world attacks at scale to pinpoint the exploitable vulnerabilities and prioritize remediation towards business impact. Learn more at pentera.io. BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.